RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We're at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com.
Hi, welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. And with me, as usual, is Tanner. Hi, Tanner.
Hey, Dusty, what's good?
You know, D&D is good.
D&D is good.
Tabletop games are good.
That's a controversial statement these days.
Yes. Tabletop games are good. I know it's controversial, and I'm not Wizards' biggest fan, but I still say D&D the way some people say Kleenex.
Sure, and I mean, what we've been playing lately is OSR stuff, which is D&D in all, you know, its lineage, so.
Fair enough. So D&D is good. So today we're talking about another Hex Dungeon, this time one that I ran for you. I still don't have a great name for this adventure. Maybe, this is not in the show notes, we can try to come up with a name for this adventure while we record this podcast episode. I don't know, Leprechaun's Luck, I don't know, something. Let's see if we can come up with a name. If we can't, oh well, no biggie. But it's a St. Patrick's Day themed hex crawl that I ran for you in the basic fantasy role-playing game. And it's basic fantasy plus basically one page of rules that I created to enable one-on-one play with one PC, similar to the Scarlet Heroes rules.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. This is our third time, I believe, doing a Hex Dungeon, correct? So you did Festung Castell, and then I did our last episode, which was the Ruined Asylum of Ulgreth. And then this is your second at-bat for this Hex Dungeon concept.
Yes, my second time running and your second time playing, but our third time overall on the Hex Dungeon concept.
Yeah, do you want to talk about, what's the deal with holiday adventures? Because, I mean, we're having the St. Paddy's one, and then we're going to do another one next episode. We're going to talk about another holiday-themed dungeon. So where did that come from?
One RPG supplement that I've always wanted is just holiday dungeons. Like, straight up, off your teacher's third grade bulletin board, holiday dungeons. and that, for me, is the North Star of, like, what do I include in a St. Patrick's Day dungeon? Well, what kinds of things might a teacher have put on the bulletin board in March in 1989 with regard to St. Patrick's Day? Like leprechauns, pots of gold, rainbows, maybe some serpents.
You never know. Yeah, that was cool. And I'm glad that you talked about it's the thing that you always wanted that no one has ever made yet to your knowledge. I think that that's such a cool and powerful sort of creative motivator, especially with RPG stuff. It's like, oh man, I wish someone had a Dragon Rider class for D&D. I guess I'll make it and put it out there. You know, like the taking the step from being a fan of something to creating something is always cool to me.
Yeah, I can't be the only one who's always wished that there was a clear-cut Christmas adventure, a clear-cut Halloween adventure, a clear-cut, and what's more, all in one book.
Right. So the idea would be that you would, bust this out if you had four people around at Christmas time or whatever, and you're hanging out, and you know, you'd have everything you need right in front of you, right?
Absolutely. And plus, if you're already decorating your house for Christmas or St. Patrick's Day or whatever, why not take advantage of that decor in multiple ways? I mean, have family over and have corned beef, but also have some friends over and use those same St. Patrick's Day decorations to run them through a St. Patrick's dungeon.
Awesome. Yeah.
So Tanner, before we even got started playing, as I reviewed the one-on-one rules with you, because I'd sent you the supplement, this packet of stuff, including pre-made characters, you had action economy feedback right away, which I desperately needed, by the way. Mm-hmm. You were right. You were 100% right. What do you think about like custom rules in the OSR scene? Is it like, my God, the last thing we need is another set of custom rules? Or is it always kind of interesting to see how it plays in a particular milieu?
I'm always in favor of them in OSR stuff. So it kind of depends on the system. Me and you have both played a lot of systems, and you know, and I know that kind of the more complex and fiddly the system is, or like the more parts of a system is like interconnected, it's really hard to change or modify one thing without it having sort of a cascading effect. But with OSR games, I think they're kind of built on hacking rules into them, and they're so bare bones, rules light things, and they have all these spaces for rules if you want to insert them. Like if you wanted to take, you know, your OSR system of choice, which is Basic Fantasy, and you wanted to add like mass battle rules or, you know, spell duels or something like that, like those are all things that I'm sure you could have a good first draft at within like 25 minutes, right? Like I think that is sort of the strength of these OSR type games. But you know, they have to be thoughtful, they have to be implemented thoughtfully, and they have to suit the needs of your table, right? So if you would have showed up with an extra page of wizard duel rules for this game, I would have kind of questioned that. I'm like, is that something we're going to be doing? But we are playing one-on-one, so we kind of took a lot of inspiration from Scarlet Heroes, and you developed some one-on-one rules and incorporated them.
You say that, and now I want to do wizard dueling rules.
I think, I'm trying to remember, there's some OSR game, I think maybe like Dungeon Crawl Classics or something has good wizard duel rules, but yeah, it'd be fun.
I've got a lot of thoughts that I'm going to skip because it's nothing to do with this episode. So helping the she, spelled S-I-D-H-E, kind of this Irish Celtic concept of the fae, and I am not personally Irish, neither Irish nor Celtic. So those of you in the audience who are, correct me on my pronunciation or understanding. But in the Irish culture, the she, the fae, it's kind of the same thing, hence the banshee, etc. Was helping the she, the leprechauns, essentially, banish serpents from the fae realm compelling as a St. Patrick's Day kind of dungeon plot?
Yeah, I think so. You have like a very strong antagonistic faction, which is the serpent people, I guess, the serpents and the serpent people. And you have, and it kind of is mimicking the legend of St. Patrick banishing the snakes from Ireland and stuff. And, you know, our game was not set in Ireland, right? It was a sort of fantasy inspiration, but I thought it was a cool hook. And as soon as you introduced it, I'm like, oh, what a clever idea for the thrust of the dungeon and what you'd be doing.
You know, we didn't talk about it in the moment, and I trusted that you knew what was up with the serpents and St. Patrick's Day, but it's also one of those things that you don't want to come out and say it because then you get the nasty look like, duh, man, duh.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe if you're running this for kids or something and they don't know that story, you know, that might be hit or miss. But then again, when I was a kid, I'd probably want to be fighting snake people too in my game. So it'd be fine with me.
Absolutely. How'd we do at hitting your dungeon checklist? Because even though we were in areas and not rooms, we very much played this as a dungeon crawler. I should say I ran it as a dungeon crawl. How do we hit your dungeon crawl checklist?
Yeah, I think we did pretty good here. So reminder of my checklist, let's go through it one by one. So multiple factions, you definitely had that. So you had the she, you had the serpent folk, and then you had, I don't know if you had a name for them, but the red caps, right?
The red caps was the name, because I thought red caps, red coats, Irish British, some fun rivalry there. And in BFRPG, Basic Fantasy Role-Playing Game, there is an enemy type, kind of a gnome variant called red caps.
Yeah, and so you had actually three, and I think I kind of bounced between at least pretending to ally with at least all three of those during my exploration of this dungeon, right?
You did, in fact, pretend to ally with all three of them. I had not thought of that. That's funny.
Yeah, then so things to talk to, things to fight. Yep, absolutely. Didn't expect to be able to talk to the serpent people, but I definitely did. I killed a lot of red caps and a lot of she, and I killed some serpent people, I think. So yeah, I talked to you and killed the same thing.
You did.
Yeah. I played this one pretty, I was kind of a bastard in this one, but you know, I was trying to, in my defense, I was trying to kind of just test the robustness of the scenario. You know, I wasn't really trying to inhabit a character.
We don't have your quote-unquote bastardness in the show notes. We should touch base. You want to tell that story now?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, so I was, the character I was playing was an elf named Fife, and he was a like classic sort of basic fantasy elves was sort of a combination between a fighter and a magic user. And I was, you know, you had given me feedback that I kind of play all characters the same. So I really tried to play this character kind of just in it for himself, you know, and trying, I wasn't trying to be a do-gooder. He was definitely willing to like kind of play people against each other. And try to get out of there basically with his own skin. But as we'll discuss in the next episode, I really swung and tried to find a new tack with him. And I don't think I was entirely successful in the next one either, but I don't know. It's hard to, I don't know. Playing characters is hard, man. I don't know.
It is.
Yeah.
But as long as you had fun, but the bastardness too, the version I was going with, how did I get you into the dungeon? Well, I had a leprechaun kind of show up in the middle of the tavern and give you a mission, and your reward was all the gold you can carry. And then later, you found the gold that he promised you, and it was way too big to carry. So yeah. You were pissed. You were so mad.
Yeah, so my character mad. Was, yeah.
And then unbeknownst to you, the gold got smaller and smaller and smaller the more serpents you killed. And when all the serpents were gone, the gold was going to be normal size. So you thought he screwed you over.
Yeah.
But in fact, he had not. And when you figured that out, I can't believe I didn't put this in the show notes because this is huge. That was my favorite moment of the dungeon. It was when one of the leprechauns said to you, "No, wait, if you fulfill the obligation, then whatever deal he made with you will come true. Like it'll work out." And like your face as you kind of worked through, wait a minute, what was a thing of beauty.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad that, yeah, once I started seeing the serpent people as a paycheck waiting to happen, you know, I think it really turned around his whole view of the world. But that circles back nicely to point three on the dungeon checklist, items/traps/puzzles to interact with. Yeah, you definitely had that, right? You had the, you had one hex, which was a giant pot of gold, but it was giant and the coins were enormous and they would shrink in size to be a manageable, transportable thing once I defeated the serpents, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that was cool. And, you know, if I really wanted to, if I really didn't want to interact with that, I could have, like, used a sharp knife and scraped a couple of gold shavings and gotten something for my time, right? But it wouldn't have been the paycheck that it was.
Those gold shavings would have shrunk down, though, to be proportional to...
Oh, on the way out, they would have been, yeah.
You would have essentially had a pocket full of glitter.
Oh, man. Well, there's worse things to leave a dungeon with. and then you had something you should probably run from, which was the, I call it a bullet. You call it, you are of the French persuasion. What do you call
bullet.
It? A bullet, a land shark, right? Who was hiding and burrowing beneath the pot of gold. And you had, I think you had a... did you have like a wandering monster thing? Or like, what was the timer, right? That
I did have a wandering monster. So if you didn't succeed in getting rid of the preponderance, a majority of the serpents, not all of them, but you had to get a majority of the serpents gone by, I forget how many turns. If you didn't, a mega serpent, a dragon, was going to start being seen in the sky and potentially show up. And if that dragon showed up in a hex, like the Beulah, you would have absolutely would have needed to run from that green dragon.
That's awesome. That's cool. So yeah, I think you're 4 for 4.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. What was your favorite room of the dungeon?
No, I was just reviewing that and I kind of have two. So the pot of gold that we talked about, I mean, just that's just so clever. And I think I told you at the time, I'm like, this is so cool. Like having a giant pot of gold that like you're almost like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, like walking across the surface of like this, like what a cool idea for like a landscape too, like these giant coins kind of scattered about. That's super cool. If you were to like blow this up to be a region, that would be like a cool like terrain type to use, you know.
Ooh, it would be.
Yeah. And then the other one was the battlefield between the Red Cap and the She. I can't remember. When I was younger, I had like this cool book of like encyclopedia fantasy creatures, and it had Red Caps in it. And it just talked about, it had like a really nasty drawing of them and talked about like how bloodthirsty they were. And they would like go and eat corpses off the battlefield and stuff like that. Or some, that's what the book said at least. So I had like a very vivid imagination of what that Red Cap you know, Battlefield looked like really kind of the ugly side of the Fae Legends and stuff. So that one was very cool in my mind as well.
I had no idea I was tapping into that.
Yeah.
I was very much tapping into the Anglo-Irish rivalry or Irish-Anglo rivalry, whichever way you, whichever one you would put first in your order. Obviously, as an American, I've got no real point of view on the Troubles, so please don't take anything I say as any sort of point of view on the Troubles. But I just thought having a battlefield here with the Red Caps standing in for the Redcoats and the Shi kind of battling it out, with the Red Caps being the more vicious, bloodthirsty invaders. Mm-hmm. That it would just be kind of a fun way to show the conflict. I did not anticipate that would have been one of your favorite rooms. That answer really surprises me.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of one of those things too, where like you kind of never know what personal stuff that someone's coming into a game with, and sometimes that can be negative. You know, like you didn't know that this person had this experience with this thing that you're presenting in a game, and that could blow up in your face and be a negative, but it's also could be a positive. Like, you know, if you have a cool griffin in your game and one of your friends read a cool book about griffins when they were a kid and that was their favorite monster from when they were a kid, like, you know, like that kind of stuff can elevate a game too. It's not necessarily something that you can count on, but it's nice when it happens, right?
So what was your least, and I think I know the answer here, so why don't we change the question to say, what are your two least favorite rooms? Because I'm pretty sure I know one.
Yeah, so yeah, let's talk about the Cloverfield. That's the room, quote unquote. Again, I want to sort of give you props that you've turned these hex rooms into regions, which is cool. But yeah, the Cloverfield, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I started there, it was like an infinite Cloverfield, and I needed to find a four-leaf clover to like be able to leave the hex. Is that correct?
It is correct. So the leprechaun gave you a pair of glasses.
Right.
Before he expired, when he showed up in your tavern and like pulled you into the Fey realm and asked you to help him before he died. If you would have worn those glasses, it would have made the rolls to find four-leaf clover much easier, but I didn't have any indication for you that you needed to find a four-leaf clover. And yeah, you're in this endless expanse of a clover field from horizon to horizon, but if you find a four-leaf clover, the doors out of that area appear, and you can leave that area and go to other areas. I still have not, you gave me the feedback I need to rework that puzzle. I haven't run this for anyone else, so I have not had the impetus to like sit down and actually rework it. I think it could be as simple as like an inscription or a riddle or a clue that like, you know, find good luck's charm or something like that. Something to indicate that, oh, I need to find a four-leaf clover. But I just haven't reworked this yet. Do you have any thoughts on how I should rework it?
Yeah, I think that you either need a hint like that, and or you need the glasses to do something else in the dungeon too. Because the glasses reveal, I don't think they revealed anything else anywhere, or did they? Or they revealed the rainbow, right?
The rainbow,
to the pot of gold. Yeah,
yes. Every hex that was in line with the pot of gold, you could look up and see the rainbow, and it would point you to the pot of gold.
Yeah. I'm wondering. I mean, so the Cloverfield thing, either they get it right away, or they're completely stumped, and you have to kind of give it to them, right? Like, I don't know if there's really an evolution of understanding and puzzles. Like, there's no experimentation to do, really, you know? Mm-hmm. So I could see, and especially that being the first hex that they go into, like that could just really start things off in a sour note, you know? Maybe have like one exit or something, and then if they use the glasses, they can see the other two exits or something like that. Like, yeah, it needs a rework for sure, but I would either say, you know, you have to have a hint, or you have to make the glasses do other stuff so that like this is an introduction type thing to like show you that the glasses can be used in every hex, or just kind of rework the idea, I think.
I think what I'm going to do is have the riddle, but then also I'm going to have a four-leaf clover like sitting, just that's already been picked, sitting on the stone tablet where the riddle is. Mm-hmm. And when they pick it up, that's when the doors will appear. So they get the first way out for free. But then every time they pass back through the hex,
oh, they need to find a four-leaf clover. Yeah.
That way it's a time sink. Like we'll pick, okay, we'll roll a d6 and let's see how many times it takes you to get the one or the two to find a clover. And okay, you spent 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Oh, you found one. Okay, yep. After, so you spent 40 minutes stuck here until you found one.
I think that's a way better solution.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad we talked it out. All right. Good. So I'm challenging you to come up with a second least favorite room.
So I explored the cavern, right, to find the leader of the snake people, and the tunnels leading to the cavern were kind of whatever. They had one entrance and one exit, like a tunnel. There was a cool scene in there where the snakes were filling the snake skins with like purple goo to turn them into, like, that was a cool scene, but like other than that, like, there wasn't anything to like do in those tunnels except to go through them, which, you know, that is what tunnels are, right? But like, I don't know, I think that could have maybe used a little bit of pizzazz, you know.
So essentially, I could, looking at the map where I have two tunnels leading to the cavern, I could still have that cool scene by leaving one of the tunnels headed to the cavern. But then that very bottom hex, I could reclaim that to be something else St. Patrick's themed.
Yeah, I think that would be a better thing, because especially having two things in a row that are both tunnels and you have to go through one and then go through the other, you know, it's a very minor nitpick, but, you know, it was one of those things where once I figured out what was going on, I said, oh, okay, I'm moving on, you know.
Well, since I have freed up a hex now, do you have anything that's quintessentially would go on a teacher's bulletin board in the third grade about St. Patrick's that I'm missing and have not included?
You could have a boxing match. You could have corned beef. You could have, that's a good question. I don't know. You could have like a little cheeky Lucky Charms joke going on in there if you wanted.
Ooh, let me think through that.
Yeah.
All right. So, specific feedback aside, in general, did you see improvement in this Hex Dungeon from the previous Festoon Castell, or as I've come to start calling it, my Frankenstein Hex Dungeon?
I wouldn't say an improvement. It's applying it, the template, to kind of a different theme, right? It's a more open region. It's not like one enclosed space, and it's so holiday themed that that's the appeal of this thing, right? So I wouldn't say it's like an improvement over it, but it's definitely a demonstration that you can apply the Hex Dungeon concept to other types of things, if that makes sense.
It does. Any closing thoughts, anything that we didn't talk about that sticks out to you about this game?
No, I mean, I think it was I'm glad I kind of challenged you to a weirder holiday, because you asked me like, which holiday should I do first? And I'm like, oh, I'm really going to give them a hard time. So let's do St. Patrick's Day, make a dungeon. Like, what's that going to be? Right. So I like that you rose to the occasion and you created that. And yeah, it was cool. It was a cool proof of concept. I'm curious if you do all the other holiday ones. I think you had like 6 or 8 planned, right? Something like that.
I had 8 planned, but now I've got 12 planned, one for each month.
Well, if you ever get through all 12, I'd be curious to see what you feel like when you come back and read this one. I bet like your skills are going to be a lot sharper by the time you get to the end of your grim task.
I'm actually really enjoying it. Yeah. I've got an idea for the Valentine's Day dungeon that I'm so happy with that I'm not going to tell you about. All right. So coming in on lessons learned here, Hex Dungeons are a solid concept. This was our third at bat with Hex Dungeons. And I mean, look, it wasn't like a home run. We didn't crush it, but I think we got to third base on it.
Yeah.
Not in a weird way. Like I think it was a solid hit. Like it was a good result for an at bat. It was a solid, good game. I don't really have any regrets about the game. Very mild with the Clover puzzle, but I'm enjoying the Hex Dungeon thing. I'm not saying it's the end all be all. We in fact got tired of Hex Dungeon shortly thereafter. It's not a thing that I would do forever and ever. Amen is my only way, but it's a solid thing to try out. So hey, if you're listening, maybe give it a shot. Second lesson learned is a good theme goes a long way, because when you have a free hex or you have a free thing to look at, or you're trying to figure out what content to include or what the theme is, or what the what's happening in this hex, you can just go back to your theme and ask yourself, okay, what fits in this theme? What else would be on a teacher's bulletin board? What else would be the quintessential American view of St. Patrick's Day? Because that's what I was going for, that bulletin board stuff. So a good theme goes a long way to help you fill all the rooms of your dungeon. And then the last item is goals are key. A leprechaun appeared with a doorway to a dimension and where he wanted you to kill some snakes for him, and you accepted the mission. And having that goal as a North Star of what am I even doing here was vital to give you a motivation to like move through this dungeon and not just, you know, stop and frankly settle down at the pot of gold and just live there amongst the coins, ever eluding the boulet, surrounded by insane treasure. So yeah, goals are key.
All right. I Googled some St. Patrick's Day puns, and I have two ideas for a title for this adventure.
Ooh, I forgot about that. Let's do it.
So either gold riddance,
or
you could always go for Rainbow Connection.
I don't get the pun behind Rainbow Connection.
The Muppet song.
I still don't get it. I'm not as familiar with the Muppets.
How about Dusty St. Patrick's Day Spudtacular?
I love Rainbow Connection, though, because the audience has no way to know this, but before we hit record, you and I were briefly discussing the Rainbow Six games.
We were, yeah.
I like Rainbow Connection.
Print it.
Rainbow Connection it is, because you look up, you see the rainbow, leads you to the pot of gold. Yeah, Rainbow Connection it is. That's the new name for this adventure. All right. Thank you for listening.
Take care.
People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.